Hi, you're listening to Spooks, Creeps, and Assorted Devery. I hope you enjoyed the show.
Hey, listeners, welcome to another episode of Spooky Skeptics. I've got my OG crew with me tonight. I've got Rick and Tanya. Say hi, Rick and Tanya.
Hi, Rick and Tanya.
I had so much faith in y'all too. Tonight we have a super duper special guest host, one Mr. Jordan Heat from Campfire Tales of the Strange and Unsettling. I'm so sorry.
You just double check that name, Jordan.
Yeah, I did. I'm looking down. I'm like, I mix it. I flip flop words all the time.
Campfire stories that are frightening
and strange and unsettling.
Exactly.
How are you tonight, Jordan?
I'm doing well. I'm excited for this.
Good
deal. It's generous.
We were too.
I know, and I picked the missing 411 mainly because it's something I didn't know a lot about. So I try to pick stuff. I like to learn things. I got that, you know.
Sure.
And so I thought it was pure serendipity to find out that you have a Patreon dedicated to this. Am I right?
Yeah, we have a series on the Campfire Tales of the Strange and Unsettling Patreon called Into Thin Air. And it's every episode documents in detail a missing 411 case.
Oh, that's cool.
Yep.
That is cool, cool, cool.
We started that because every time I see missing 411 covered on a podcast, it's like a big, it's all covered all at once. You know what I mean?
And right, right.
I just felt like a lot of these cases, like they deserve a whole hour of their own. You know what I mean?
For sure, because definitely. I had a hard time even picking just two cases to bring to the table. You know, there's, and I was saying this earlier, I have to cleanse my brain after I dig into this stuff because it is so sad. And I'll get into that a little bit more here. You know, when I first started this, again, like I said, I didn't know much about missing 411. I knew about Mr. Paulides and I'd heard about the docs, but I hadn't watched them. So I did watch both of them on Prime. And I did read excerpts from the books. I didn't dive right into the books, but then I did a lot. I dove down a lot of rabbit holes researching a couple of different cases. But my first thing was like, okay, so what does missing 411 stand for? What's the 411 stand for? Is it for information? Because I couldn't find a definitive answer on that. Is it information? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think so. Because Paulides' whole thing is that all this information was missing. It wasn't being documented. You know,
right,
so
it just disappeared a lot of times.
Yeah,
and
I think that's why he called it that.
I'm sorry.
No, I think that's why he called it that.
Okay, yeah, because like I said, I was like, "What does the 411 stand for information? Missing information? What?" And I have such a weird brain that sometimes I can't see the obvious, you know. So I like to ask, and you know, so when I started this, I'm like, well, first you got to kind of go with like Hyman's categorical imperative. And that's what Mr. Paulides started with too. Is there an actual problem? You have to decide if there's an actual thing before you start looking for answers to said thing.
Right.
You know, so he started documenting cases that had similarities. Some of his criterias were mainly in the National Park Service, and I'll get to that in a little bit, because those numbers are crazy, underreported crazy, because I went a different way to find some real numbers, but I'll talk about that in a second. Back to his criteria, because I'm like, well, what makes it a missing 411? You know, first of all, they're mainly in the national park system somewhere. There's no dog scent. The dogs can never track a scent.
Right.
Okay, that's a big one. Most of the people that he highlighted were experienced hikers or mountaineers. They knew their way around the wilderness. They were survivalists. Mm-hmm. They knew their shit. He also picked cases where the bodies were found either, whether alive or dead, either clothed or partially unclothed. And then the clothing or the items were found at like a different elevation or a really ridiculous mileage away from where the person's remains and or person was, because some of the cases, the people were found And he did highlight some nice kid ones where the kids were found. But again, like the kid would show up a few miles away completely naked. Now, okay, my brain goes to human monsters, but, you know, and it is a little bit convenient that kids don't have the recollection that adults do. So I did include a kid in my cases, but not like that. Another thing that I ran across in a couple of different things that I read is that he remarked that where a lot of the missing went missing, there were always berry bushes or cherries. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know. I feel like there's berries and shit everywhere in the wilderness. So yeah. I wasn't really buying into that one. You know, so and the numbers, like, I don't know about his criteria, but going just by the numbers, when you look it up officially, the official statement is that from 1958 to 2021, we only have 29 open missing person cases in the National Park Service. And I'm like, that's ridiculous. That can't be right. Okay. Yeah. So I went a different way. I went into search and rescue cost data sheets. And that'll tell you how many missions they went on, who they saved. It's about the cost of it, but it tells you the real numbers. Hmm. So what I found out is that in between 1992 and 2007, just in the National Park Services alone, the search and rescue for National Park Services got 65,243 cases. And they broke it down into there was 2,659 fatalities, 24,000 ill or injured that they rescued, 13,000 saves. That still leaves like 20,000 freaking people unaccounted for that they're even talking about.
The one I looked at also broke down animals, which most of the state parks didn't have any animal fatalities except for Yellowstone.
Yeah, and the reason Yosemite are the biggest
is because
ones.
People keep trying to pet buffaloes.
Yeah,
is where that came from.
I think I would try to.
That's how I'm gonna die.
Shirts and everything. It says, "Do not pet the furry cows." That's everywhere.
There's just a few years ago, some people died while trying to put a baby buffalo into their car.
Yes,
they were literally trying to like pick up a baby and put it in their. In the backseat of their car.
And didn't their mama kick?
Yes.
Its mama came? Yeah.
Yeah.
And those are not little animals.
No, they are so big. They're so much bigger in person than you think, too.
Yeah, I immediately think of, you know, The Lost World sequel to Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Taking the baby T-Rex in their camper and then getting knocked off a cliff. Like, yeah. That's what you get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't mess with babies.
Play stupid
like
games.
Baby bears, nothing. Get stupid prizes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, I don't know about his criteria per se, but he's not wrong about the numbers and he's not wrong about it being underreported. He's not wrong about they're supposed to have, and I looked into it, they're supposed to have this database where they report all of this. They do not.
Yeah.
So,
you know, another thing is that before he kind of brought attention to this, they weren't even supposed to. No one had even said, hey, you need to have a database. That came from the attention of him, you know, him getting attention on it. And they still
they would make them stop searching for people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, the numbers themselves kind of really blew me out of the water, to be honest. It's, you know, I didn't realize it was that big of a number. And then, I mean, as of right now in the United States, we've got 22,740 people that we don't know where they're at. And we know that's underreported because as Jordan and I have talked about before, there are vast demographics in our own country that just don't get reported.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, so that's a low number in my opinion, but
yes,
you know, and then they said that I think it's like a 10% of those are in the national park systems. Mm. When they broke it down, it's California, Texas, and Florida are the top three states. I mean, that makes sense with trafficking, you know. and then Alaska and Arizona, but Alaska's fucking crazy. Okay. So yeah. I don't know, man.
Of all the states, Alaska probably has the most unreported missing cases.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Because, and there's a lot of people that go up there to be missing.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
yeah, that is true.
You also have a huge indigenous population up there that underreporting and
those, the crime against them. It's
like
so
the girls
prevalent.
That go missing and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's a big demographic that is nothing is ever done about. Nothing is, they don't bother reporting it because the cops don't give a shit.
Right.
You know, and it's, I mean, I'm pretty ACAB to begin with, but after doing a lot more of this research and digging in, it just makes me even more, because every missing person case starts with the cops going, oh, they're adults. They have the right to be a missing. No matter if you have 50 people there going, no, this person wouldn't do that. The cops are like, right. No, come back in 2 days. Well, that's critical time.
Yeah.
Well, let's mention that Pilates was a police officer.
He was. Well. That was part of why I I kind of took portions of what he says pretty seriously, because he wasn't wrong about seeing that there's something wrong with this. Mm-hmm. Okay. Not in my opinion. And I did pick two of his cases. One I picked from the docs that are on Prime, and one I picked from an excerpt from one of his books. And I feel like they're on opposite ends of the spectrum, and you'll see why once I start talking about them. You know, I mean, I think there is something going on. And some of the causes that were listed in the books and on the docs and whatnot were alien abductions, mm-hmm. Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah.
Feral humans. Okay, I kind of buy into feral humans. I'll speak more on that later. this is my personal favorite, and I left it in just for Rick. Transdimensional chupacabra.
That upsets
wow,
me.
Wow, I have not heard
just
that.
For Rick.
That's I have not heard
it's
all, that.
There's hurtful. Always ghosts.
That hurtful. Comes straight from David Pilates' appearance on Coast to Coast AM.
Mm-hmm. That where, was a direct quote one.
Yeah. It's just like he offhandedly mentions it and it became the headline of the whole show. And it like it's yeah. Another thing that should be mentioned about David Pilates is that he did have a pretty strong affiliation with like with Bigfoot groups while he was a policeman. And his first two books are about Bigfoot
mm-hmm.
before the missing 411 books. A lot of people.
But he never did say
fingers.
What he thought it was, did he? Yeah,
no.
I don't think so.
But a lot of people say like, "Oh, he's a Bigfoot guy," so he's in. He has to be insinuating that this is a Bigfoot problem.
It's unspoken. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I got from the one doc. I mean, let's put aside the alien connection one because that documentary, they owe me money. That's all I'm gonna say. But he did talk about something that's one of my pet things, where one of the park rangers had said, yeah, it's just the Lemurians, they do that, you know.
The who?
Lemurians,
the sunken Pacific continent.
Yeah, underground.
That's the I think he was at, he's actually referring to the Lemurians that supposedly live inside Mount Shasta. Oh. Right.
Yeah, it was the Mount Shasta one, actually. It really was. As soon as you said that clicked it. But I remember that the park ranger's name was Carl. So Carl said it's the Lemurians is who's causing the disappearances on Mount Shasta.
It's the most park ranger name. Carl.
It is.
Carl. It is.
Number one
Carl,
park ranger name.
Carl. He's, oh, yeah. It's the people who live underground. Like, just say it real matter of fact, too. You know, oh, yeah. And I'm like, you know, come here, buddy.
That reminds me of a time my wife and I were eating at a diner, and we were up at the counter and there was another couple a few spaces away from us, and we kind of overheard the wife was just like, Congress just never gets anything done. And the husband goes, well, they're reptiles.
You hear that, Walter? Reptiles on your nut job bingo card. Another one.
Exactly.
Yeah, we were just talking last night about the reptilian conspiracy. It's rooted in anti-Semitism.
Oh yeah,
Yeah. I have to hate it.
David, that's Icke. That was one rabbit hole that actually made me feel really icky.
More like David Icke, am I right?
Whoa. Whoa. That's why you get the big bucks.
That's right.
All right, so I'm going to get to my stories. Like I said, I picked two that one, I really feel like there's a mundane reason. The other one, kind of a Scooby-Doo mystery. And I even found something even a little bit more to it today, which I didn't know, but sometimes I run across things randomly. So I'm going to start with a case that our listeners may have heard of before he was splashed all over the news. He was a 2-year-old little baby named Dior Koontz. Now, little Dior went camping with his family and friends. The camping party consisted of little Dior, his father, Vernal Dior Koontz, his father's at the time girlfriend, I believe they got married and some at some point after this, Jessica Mitchell, Robert Walton, who was Jessica's grandpa, so we're just going to call him Grandpa Bob. He was there, and then Grandpa Bob's friend Isaac Reinwand. So they decided to all go camping at the Timber Creek Campground, which is in the Salmon Chalice National Forest in Idaho, Lemhi County. Lemhi, I might be saying that wrong. I'm really bad at pronunciation.
It's Lemhi.
Is it Lemhi?
Yeah.
There we go. Yep. All right. Lemhi County, Idaho. But it is the Salmon Chalice National Forest, and it's a campground in there, which is how I believe it ended up in a missing 411 up thing. Because quite honestly, I have seen this story on other docs. I was already real familiar with the names and whatnot when I started digging a little bit more into it. Anyways, they all go, again, little Dior is 2 years old, and they all go to Timber Creek Campground on July 9th, 2015. They go in the evening, supposedly they stopped at the store, set up camp. And the next morning they get up. Now, okay, I've seen the mother give a few different interviews, and even up to today, I've heard 5 million different stories about what happened this morning. They all agree that Vernal, Jessica, and little baby Dior got in the car and went to the store. First, she said for snacks and bait. Then she said later on she needed tampons. I don't know. Like, there was all kinds of weird stuff said. She talked about how little Dior saw the Pepsi truck and was excited about the red, white, and blue, and that he talked to the truck driver. I kind of thought that was cute because I remember my grandson at that age thought that the Budweiser truck was Optimus Prime. And used to get super excited every time he saw one. And yeah. I never disabused him of that notion. Oh, yeah, he's on his way to go, you know, solve some crime, buddy, or deliver to a bar, whatever. And anyway, so like that part kind of stuck with me. You find out later that the truck driver says while he saw the car seat in the car, he never saw baby Dior. So that story kind of falls off to the wayside. But they do say they went to the store. They were seen at the store. At least Vernal and Jessica were. They go back to the campground. When they get back, Grandpa Bob is sitting in his chair. Isaac says to the parents, hey, let me show you this fishing spot I found. Okay, so Jessica says, hey, Grandpa Bob, you want to watch little Dior? He says, now Grandpa Bob says to the, before, up until he passed, said that he never heard her say that. He was never asked to watch that baby. Isaac takes him down to show him the spot, and as Isaac moves up down to the river to go to his own special spot, and I've heard 3-4 different iterations of this too. The one I'm going with is Jessica saw some minnows and said that, oh, Dior would really like these. Went back up to the campground, which was, from what I can gather, about 100 yards away, and they kind of had to walk down this little path thing. And from where Isaac was, they wouldn't have been able to see him. He was further down the river. And she got up there, no Dior. Hey, Grandpa Bob, where's Dior? Grandpa Bob's like, he's with y'all. Now, Grandpa Bob's on oxygen all the time. He's got it. And from what people that were interviewed said, he was a little wonkadoodle too, like memory-wise. I kind of feel for Grandpa Bob. Anyways, Grandpa Bob still, like I said, he always claimed that nobody ever asked him to watch baby Dior. Anyways, there's no baby Dior. So they start freaking out, blah, blah, blah. They call 911. Now, here's where I've also heard three or four different stories. In her 911 call, and I heard the actual call, she said they had been looking for him for about an hour. In subsequent interviews, the mom said, oh, we called 911 like within 10 minutes. There was no trace of him, no clothing, no sound. He was just gone.
Gone,
completely gone. Not a peep, not a sound. Now, it is something to note that all five of these people failed polygraph tests. All five of them.
Oh, that doesn't look good.
Yeah, even right. Grandpa Bob?
Even Grandpa Bob failed the polygraph. But, okay, Grandpa Bob's on oxygen and probably a lot of medication.
Yeah.
Okay,
well, he I might just fail can't it blame anyway, it on yeah.
I'm really not blaming Grandpa Bob here. It landed in missing 411 because the dogs came, could get no trace of the kid. Dogs caught no scent.
Can dogs trace across water, though? Because they were saying that when they got to water or something on the one I was listening to. And I thought dogs couldn't track across water. Is that incorrect?
I mean, some can and some can't. It depends on what they're actually trained for.
Okay.
Because there are like the dogs that find like human remains. They can find them at the bottom of lakes, you know.
Oh, okay.
They
like, wow.
Yeah, they like can detect it on the wind coming off the water.
That's
so
intense.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it just depends on.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It just depends on what they're trained for.
Oh, okay. Okay, that makes sense.
But it is super common for dogs to struggle tracking babies, like small children. Because from what I've read, it's like something, it's something about how their scent isn't as unique as it will be, like once they are physically developed more. Like, you know how people talk about like the smell of a baby?
Yes.
Right? Baby smell.
Like everybody they kind of start out very similar, and it's as you like hit puberty and all that, then you like develop your personal. Yeah, your personal pheromones and all that come into play, and then it's easier for the dogs to track you.
That's interesting. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, never would have thought of it.
And the one thing I saw said that they're trained not to hit on animal bones. Like, they are trained to hit on just human cadavers. So, because there was some guy saying, well, it would hit on anything. He's like, no, she's the... And there was just no trace of him. Now, I feel like because the bobcat theory was floated around, stuff like that, and I'm like, well, I feel like if any animal grabbed a two-year-old child, that child would scream bloody fucking murder.
You'd think so. Yeah.
To be quiet. I've never met a two-year-old.
No.
Yeah.
Well, plus, especially if something grabbed it, like a bobcat or something, because it would hurt it even if it wasn't trying to, because it would have it in its teeth.
Plus, there was no blood. There was nothing. There was just nothing. He was just gone. And that's part of why I think I'm adjusting the heating pad. That's part of why I think it ended in the missing 411 case files. I really, truly believe that this one has a human monster in it.
Yeah.
I don't believe that there was anything paranormal related to it. Again, like, it's interesting to note the mom lost custody of her previous children.
Yeah,
she was known for other things. To me, in her interviews, she looked like she liked to partake in some recreational substances. Not to be a judgy McJudgy, but
right, no,
you know, because I don't care what you do. But there was, again, I personally heard this woman, because I really watched a lot on this for this. Say four different things in four different interviews, you know, about what happened, the timing changes.
Yeah.
None of them can keep their story straight, you know, and they really made a point of saying that somebody had seen that baby in the morning, but then that truck driver is like, no, I saw the car seat. I never saw the baby.
Yeah, I immediately get Casey Anthony vibes.
That's, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
You're welcome, Jordan.
Thank you.
But yeah, I think that one was a human monster right there. I think somebody either, I think that maybe the mom either did that or somebody took them. The weird thing is the dog couldn't track anybody, or the kid, maybe something had happened to the kid before the camp. Maybe he didn't even make it to the camping trip.
Right. That's because they changed their story about going to that store so many times, and what they went to the store for, the timing, how long they were there, what happened when they were there. And you know, when you tell lies, you can't remember the little details like that. And that's why it changes so much. So yeah, that one, like I said, I believe that one ended up on the missing 411 because of
the dog thing,
the dog scenting, the way he just disappeared and with no trace. There was probably a berry bush, maybe.
That's what I was going to say.
There might have been a berry tree.
I didn't dig that far. Was there berries there?
Probably. Almost certainly. Don't forget it was near water.
Near water.
Near water is another one. Yeah.
There was one, and this one made me laugh, and it was just a short little excerpt from one of the books, and it was like a park ranger or something. All of his stuff was found folded neatly by a deep lake. And I'm like, oh, yeah, so mysterious. You know?
Yeah.
Boy, what happened to that guy?
Right. Exactly. You know, that one made me laugh a little bit. Were crazy, but some are actually mysterious.
There are a few of his little criteria that have gotten him like serious ridicule, right? Like the berries. And the cases happening near water. But one in particular that always stood out to me was he correlates two cases that happened in the same place. It's like 50 or 60 years apart, because one woman's name was Laura and one woman's name was Lisa.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, maybe they both start with an L, so maybe they're connected. And it's.
That's reaching a little bit.
Yeah, just a little.
Just teensy, yeah.
Well, it's these people that build these massive conspiracies. It's like they don't realize that people see what you do in small increments, and they just ascribe that to all of your work. You know what I mean?
Right, like, right. Yeah.
When you say silly shit like that, people are going to end up discounting. Like, yes, they're going to discount everything.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, because I'm going to say this about my research. When I watched the first doc, while I was like, man, most of these seem to me like to have mundane reasons.
Right.
I was still really intrigued by the numbers and the park services and this and that. And there was some of it that really caught my interest. But when I paid $3.99 for the second doc, and my takeaway from that was the aliens are creating a super race of German elk hunters. And I had to warn Walter. I sent Walter.
I would want my money back.
If you're ever hunting elk, buddy, be careful.
Oh yeah, I remember you saying that. Yeah, I didn't know what it was about at the time, but I remember.
So he kind of lost me there, because you know what? I am down for a mystery, and y'all know I believe in the paranormal hard. I like 100%, but there's certain attached things that I'm like, that's just a load of bull snot.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that one. He lost me on that one. And it's kind of sad when they do stuff like that, because it's like, you've got some really good premises there, and there's stuff that people should be looking into in this.
Right.
Like those numbers alone, none of the numbers make sense. Like none of them, you know, like what they're saying and what you see when you follow the money, which is the best way to find the numbers out, in my opinion, find out what they're spending, because they have to declare how much they spend on search and rescue. So there's a whole ass database I found that was all about that.
I like the phrase whole ass database. That's good.
Yeah.
Listen, you know,
very official.
I am who I am. This is why I don't get invited to guest on family friendly shows right here. They'll invite Laura because she's proper. I am not.
There was two stories that I heard. One of them was about a little kid, but that little kid got, they found her. And I don't know if y'all have heard this. It was, she was playing with her. They were at a campground for loggers. I think the loggers had, like lumberjacks. They had a picnic thing or whatever, and people were camping. The families were camping and stuff. And the little kids were playing. This little girl's brother was 5, and I think she was 2. No. He was 7, and she was 2. But they said that she got carried away by a bear. Mm-hmm. And she, when they finally found her, oh, and also the other kids said the same thing. And then somebody, I guess maybe the dad, saw what looked like a bear running across holding something. But they said it looked like it was on 3 legs. And apparently that is one of the things, is that stuff looks like it has 3 legs. I don't know. But they were talking about that, saying that that had been said before about the 3 legs. But when they found her, it was like the next day, it had snowed, and she didn't have hypothermia. She kept saying that it was a bear that had her and took care of her in a shelter. I mean, and she's 2, so she really can't describe what it is. But she was, they thought from what she said, it was a mama bear. But the guys that I was listening to suggested that they didn't suggest Bigfoot, but they did say...
I thought for sure that's where it was going.
No, they said that it could be, considering it looked, now I don't know where this would have came from, but considering it looked like it had 3 legs holding something, it could have been something like an orangutan or a gorilla, something like that, that actually does have, like the silverback gorillas have long, I don't know why one would be here, but has long arms. So it could be holding something and running with 3, you know, his 2 feet in his hand. But she was okay the next day. She didn't have hypothermia. Her dress wasn't wet. Her shoes weren't dirty. Something carried her away. Mm. And they found her the next day.
Is that,
I like the ones where they find them.
Yeah. With stories like that, I always wonder how much the story has changed and evolved.
Yeah.
Over time.
Yeah.
Is it, feels to me that it would have started out as something innocuous, and then they just zhuzh it up.
All of a sudden, it's a silverback gorilla.
Yeah, no, it's big. Yeah.
With that case, I always felt like they took the they took the witness report of the 2-year-old and the 7-year-old and just kind of ran with it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
And a 2-year-old's not going to know if it's a bear or what.
Yeah, of course.
They're 2.
Yeah, even a 7-year-old might give you a. You know, trying to not get in trouble for sneaking away and you know, leaving his sister behind somewhere, or you know what I mean?
That's what some people were saying, that he was probably lying to keep from getting in trouble. But then how did she not, because it rained a lot and then turned into snow. So how did she not die of hypothermia out there by herself? Because a 2-year-old, I don't think, is going to be able to find shelter. Because they said she was under a shelter that she could not have picked up the things that had made that shelter. Now, somebody could have made one and she just crawled in there to keep from getting wet, maybe.
We're back to feral humans, my dude. Which is my current favorite hypothesis.
I always liked this case, but I think my theory on it, at least, is that the brother and sister were out playing, that they strayed a little too far away from the camp, the weather got bad, and they had probably just came across like an old structure that a hunter or someone that was staying out there had made, you know what I mean, to sleep under, like bushcraft style shelter. And the boy probably went back to the camp to get help, you know what I mean, like
and then didn't want to get in trouble
for leaving her there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or being a coward or whatever.
Or taking
all 7-year-olds are cowards.
Yeah.
They are.
Supposed to be.
When I was 7.
Not me. I was a tough super ninja. All right. So the other case I picked to talk about is kind of the direct opposite of Little Dior, One, it's an adult. It happened, well, it started in 1978 up in Michigan, my home state, as a matter of fact. I'm going to now talk about one Stephen Kubacki. Kubacki? So again, if I'm mispronouncing that, I apologize. So Stephen was a senior at, I believe it was Hope College there over in by Holland, Michigan. And he was also an avid mountaineer, skier, outdoorsman. He was set to actually graduate that spring. I believe he was majoring in like history with a minor in German. He had traveled and whatnot before this too. And actually got there. His parents weren't very well off. So he won scholarships to these prestigious prep schools and then colleges. And he was considered quite brilliant. One of his friends actually described him as a real D&D kind of guy.
Yeah.
Our kind of people, Stephen. Mm-hmm. All right. So one day, Stephen tells his friends he's going to go out cross-country skiing. He'll be back by such and such a time.
I think I heard about this one. Yeah.
Yeah. He never comes back. They find his footprints that are going up, like, I think 200 yards out into Lake Michigan. On the shore, though, his footprints just stopped. Like, they literally just stop. And they find his skis with his poles right there, right on shore. I've seen three. Again, every story differs just a little bit. It's a general consensus his backpack wasn't there that day, but that showed up in the same general vicinity a couple days later.
Yeah.
I also saw another article, though, that said that the skis, poles, and backpack were neatly stacked on the, you know, right by where his footprint stopped. So it's hard to say things get lost in the mists of time. I did kind of read one of the old newspaper articles, and that didn't really mention it except for that his stuff was found. They did aerial searches and sorry, I'm admiring Jordan's dog right now, listener. That's so cute. I can't talk seriously about this with that big
fluffy. With that big fluffy baby.
Oh my God. All right, where was I? Oh my God, Stephen Kubacki. Okay, so they're looking for this dude. The footprints just stopped. There's even then the searchers weren't convinced. Everybody's saying, oh, he went under the ice and there was no cracks or nothing. There was no, and if you've ever been up there, it is flat, windblown, white as far as the eye can see, except for wherever people put up their little shacks and shanties. And there was just nothing. They didn't know what happened to him. No idea. So
he didn't like get lost in the snow or anything.
No, there was no other. His tracks literally just stopped. That's it. Hmm. They were done. Hmm. No more tracks. Like say like what you see those bunny prints and then the hawk comes and there's just, you know, that's, I mean, only, you know, there wasn't a spook print or nothing, but
yeah,
just his tracks just stopped. That's why the general consensus around the little town, and this is 1978, a little conservative town in Michigan, they're, you know, they're like, yeah, he went on. The other consensus, well, you know, he went off be a wild hippie somewhere and, you know, that, but again, no tracks. How did he get out of there?
Right.
It's interesting to note that this area is one of the points of what's considered the Michigan Triangle that goes down to, I believe, Fort Bend, Indiana, and then over to Kenosha, Wisconsin. There's been multiple UFO sightings in there. There's a ship that disappeared or wrecked, and then I believe a plane went missing in there, too. I mean, I
dozens
should know
of
this.
Ships.
Yeah, it's a lot. But okay, growing up in Michigan and especially living in a, like, I lived for a decade up in Alpena, and my favorite place to go was Belle Bay. And in one of the lagoons, there was two shipwrecks. And that's right by Misery Bay. I mean, shipwrecks were a thing.
Yeah.
And the lakes are so deep and so cold, you weren't going to find them. So I really had a hard time, even though I believed in the paranormal and believing in like a Michigan Triangle. But once you start looking into it more with the planes and the UFO sightings, there's something wonky going on over there. Michigan's wonky anyways. All right. You know, the people, I mean, we're our own special brand of people up there. And I say that, you know, like it's a thing, but so it is interesting. That's an interesting note to it. So now we are going to fast forward 15 months later and Mr. Kubaki wakes up in a field, a farm field that's in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, which another weird random number type thing was 700 miles due east on a straight line from where he disappeared.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And he doesn't remember getting there.
Okay. So this is part of it. Mr. Kubaki woke up with $40 in cash, brand new eyeglasses, new sneakers, a t-shirt from a Wisconsin marathon, and a tiny backpack, and I can't say tiny backpack without giggling, sorry, full of maps that weren't his. These maps were for like Sacramento, San Francisco, Chicago. He had no memory of going to these places. He actually was freaked out when he picked up a newspaper and saw how much time had passed. He didn't know where this stuff had come from. He went to his, and all of this information is from the one and only interview he gave right after it happened. And I'll go more into that too. There's some other stuff that's kind of weird about that. He got to his, you know, and he told the one reporter, they asked him if he was going to see something, go see somebody about what he saw. And he's like, I don't need to see anybody. I'm perfectly okay psychologically. And he never talked about it. He went on to get a PhD and he wrote a book called Meta Mathematical Foundations of Existence, Global God, Quantum, or Global Quantum God and More. It's interesting to note that about 2 years ago, I think 2020, a writer named, where's that name? I just found this today. He's put out this blurb that he has wrote the one and only biography telling the story. And then you can't find the book. The book doesn't exist. Just this blurb exists. And I'm going to read y'all the blurb. Oh, Dylan James Quarles. Okay. Claims that he knows everything. He knows the story. He's the only person who knows the story. And he wrote about it, but you can't find the book. Again, his ex-wife, when interviewed, said she didn't want to talk about it. His parents, people, he told the people closest to him what happened. His parents wouldn't talk about it. His ex-wife wouldn't talk about it. So of course, there's all kinds of conspiracy theories. Like, you go on Reddit or Quorum or any of those, and you can just find decades of content devoted to this case. And he just went on and lived his life happily in academia.
And never said anything about it.
But he made real cryptic comments about knowing that our reality isn't what we think it is. I feel like if he had been on like some kind of drug trip, like he would have talked about that by now.
You think?
You know, like had he, you know, but okay, so let me read you this blurb about this book though. Because that got me, because I actually searched for the book and then I'm like, this book doesn't fucking exist. What the fuck is this about? So it's called The Quantum Biography of Stephen Kubaki by Dylan James Quarles. It just shows footprints in the snow. And it says, The Quantum Biography of Stephen Kubaki tells the true story of a young man who vanished without a trace in 1978, only to wake up in a field 15 months later, claiming no recollection of the event. At the time, the case was big news, made bigger by Kubaki's unwillingness to grant interviews or give any hints as to where he might have been for those missing 15 months. Time passed and the story took on a life of its own, spawning dozens of conspiracy theories ranging from alien abduction to the Michigan Triangle to divine intervention. In 2018, Kubaki co-authored a book on the inconsistencies and incompleteness of our understanding of reality. That's the book I already mentioned. And like I said, he's made a lot of cryptic comments over the years about the nature of our reality and how it isn't what we think it is. Here is where I enter the story. My name is Dylan James Quarles and knew Stephen Kubaki for 6 years before learning of his famous case. after a strange dream, sorry, choking, I brought it, about my old mentor, I took to the internet to do some sleuthing. What I found both shocked and excited me. Never before had I guessed that my friend, Stephen Kubacki, was the source of a vast web of conspiracy theories, all of them stemming from his unsolved disappearance. When I asked Stephen what really happened to him in 1978, he surprised me again by offering to tell me the truth. The only catch, we had to go back to the beginning. Starting with Kubacki's birth in 1954, the story is told in parts, relying on a mixture of conversations between Stephen and I and narrative vignettes. Alternate timelines are explored, bolstered by Stephen's own assertion that our universe is at best incomplete and at worst inconsistent. Picture a newborn unheld for 6 weeks while his mother recovers from pneumonia. Picture a young man at odds with his working class family, receiving a scholarship to the prestigious Deerfield Academy. Imagine the cultural upheaval of the early 1970s as seen through the eyes of a college student experimenting with mind-expanding substances. Travel to the University of Freiburg in Germany, where an affair with a beautiful professor brings Kubacki into the company of revolutionaries and radicals. And finally, follow the events which lead to that day in 1978 when Stephen Kubacki skied out onto the frozen expanse of Lake Michigan and vanished without a trace.
I've actually spoken with Steve on several occasions.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Off the record. Always off the record. Like, he'll never go on the record. But he's like a super brilliant guy. Like, it's intimidating just chatting with him, you know, because like he'll rattle off some shit and you're like, I'm going to have to think about that for a while, you know? I'm pretty sure Dylan James Quarles is a pseudonym. I'm pretty sure
for
that
him?
Was, yes. I'm pretty sure he wrote that.
You think he never released it?
He never actually published the book.
I looked for it.
I don't know if he ever actually wrote the book. I often think that it was just something he put out to get more attention for his actual book. You know, it was just like another thing to add to, because no one had talked about his case in a while. So to put up, like, to get it out there, like, oh, a book's coming about. Remember that thing? A book's coming out about it now. It got people talking about him again. And then, you know, and then he could get more attention on his actual book. But my theory for his case, because this is actually the first one I covered for our Patreon series. I'm pretty sure he fell through the ice and made it back out. I'm not sure what happened after he made it back out after falling through the ice, but I think he probably took the opportunity, maybe like, I imagine like a sort of near-death experience, right? Maybe not an actual NDE, but like, just having that brush with death maybe made him reassess things. And I think he took a year and a half to run around the country. Before
he
going to college.
This for the, oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. That would also make sense why he didn't want to talk about it.
I honestly think, and then when he got back, there was so much like hubbub about his disappearance. I think he just rode that wave.
Yeah. Cause you really can't disappear for that long and then not tell somebody what happened.
Well,
because they're going to put something
right.
Amnesia doesn't work like that either.
Yeah.
Right.
No.
And
no.
He was very certain that he wasn't crazy. That was the thing. Like, he was like, yeah, I don't need to talk to nobody. I'm good.
Yeah. He's like, I know what happened.
Right. I'm yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. That's like, I can't actually say anything he's told me because it was all off the record, but like, that's the gist I get. I think something like that happened.
And that's a pseudonym.
Yeah, I think it kind of snowballed while he was away and he just let
it
take him. Yeah.
Well, yeah, of course it would, because he just disappeared when he was skiing and was gone and then appeared 700 miles away.
I mean, people talk about like the snow, how his footprints disappeared, right? Like you mentioned. I think he went through the ice and it was winter on Lake Michigan. Like it froze back over.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And so the footprints ended. where he fell through.
How he would get back up out of that ice.
Yeah.
Usually once you get under, you're done.
I mean, unless
that's something you learn up there.
Yeah.
Like you learn. I mean, there's a certain, I don't know. That part of it, maybe.
I mean, unless a whole piece broke off and slid in and he was able to swim over, you know what I mean?
Right.
Who knows? And my sense of it was kind of the same as yours. And I clearly don't know the guy. My sense of it was that, he went out especially when I first read about it. And again, growing up in Michigan, I always kind of thought the Michigan Triangle was hooey, but I also, I don't know. I have different feelings about those lakes up there is all I'm going to say. Like weird shit happens.
Up there.
You know,
speaking statistically, you take a triangle and place it anywhere on a map and there's going to be disappearances.
I don't believe in in the Bermuda Triangle.
It's statistically the same as any other piece of ocean.
I kind of got it filed up with piranhas and quicksand in my hand. Yeah. Head, you know, like shit that. It was fun when I was a kid.
Piranhas would be in all the water.
Right.
When I was younger.
How do you know they're not?
All the water.
Okay.
All of them.
All the water, even the pools.
Yep.
Yes, even the pools.
That's
like
where the piranhas.
That's why Tanya doesn't shower to this day.
Exactly. That'd be the only place I get water.
It'd even be tiny piranhas coming out of the shower head.
Tiny mini piranhas. I did see something and now I forgot what it was. I'm gonna have to ask Laura, but it was another reason, Rick, that we don't get in the ocean, and I can't think of what it was, but it was at a dinosaur museum. So it was probably a dinosaur.
I mean, yeah, there's lots of things in the ocean.
It was horrible.
We're not, these aren't made to be in the water. So
no, because they don't have webs between them.
Exactly.
Another interesting case though that I heard, and I don't remember these people's names. I'm good about listening to the story and then terrible about remembering people's names. He was a bear researcher. And Jordan, you may know the person. He was a bear researcher or know of the person. And so he had studied bears and he even had caught like big cats in India or something. But over here, he would catch the grizzlies and tag them. I mean, that was his job. And he hunted with a longbow, all this stuff. And when he disappeared, and I don't think they ever found him, as I remember. But when he disappeared, everybody was like, oh, it was a bear. Oh, it was a grizzly bear. But then they were saying the training that the man had had, it would be impossible for a bear to sneak up behind him. And I don't remember his name. I don't think they found him though.
It's Bert Schleyer.
That was his name, Bert. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Did they find him? They didn't find him?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so.
No, they never found him. That's another thing that gets like bandied about a lot in these cases is like this guy was an expert, right? But like experts die doing the thing they're an expert in every day.
Steve Irwin. Right.
Yeah, sure.
Yes. Sure. And was definitely an expert.
Yeah.
How many times growing up did your parents tell you, like, it's always the good swimmers who drown?
Yeah.
Like, because you get overconfident, right?
Yeah. Well,
and
the guy that invented jogging died while jogging.
That's true. Like, how do you invent jogging?
You just one saying. Day, you don't go all out. You just
he didn't walk, he didn't run. It was innovation.
He went halfsies.
You know what we're going to call this? Jogging.
Jogging. It's a soft J.
There was a guy though, about the jogging. There was the guy who created the, what was that diet? It was not the South Beach diet. It was
Atkins.
Atkins.
Yes, he died of jogging.
That's true.
He died while jogging.
Yeah, he had a heart attack.
Yeah.
Imagine, you know, you ate a whole pig worth of bacon, you're going to die of a heart attack.
Yeah, you got some cholesterol in those arteries.
You might be skinny, but your arteries are all like caked up.
But it was a delicious way to live. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
That was the two stories though, that made so much, you know, impact on me. And then also they were talking about all the parks, as well. They were talking about the park statistics and all of that and about how there's so many missing. There's so many people that the category is like, we don't know. And that's the category. How can you just not know? I mean,
well, So I Googled earlier about missing people on the whole, like for the United States. Yeah. And in 2021, it was over 500,000 people that went missing, and still 100,000 were not found by the start of 22.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's still there's a huge number of people that just up and disappear.
Right.
And it's everywhere. National parks.
And the NAMUS database, which is all the coroner's offices, I think we have something like 28,000 unidentified remains.
Yeah.
You know,
some of those might be them, and you just don't
know.
It comes
out to, like, I saw some of the math, and I mean, there's still a pretty big percentage, in my opinion, of people that we just don't fucking know. We don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know where they are. We don't know why. And these are people where their families are swearing they wouldn't just, you know,
disappear,
take a little
right.
vacay. And you know, and I tell people, I'm like, if I disappear, you make sure the cops know I would not leave. Like, I love my bedroom.
Like, right. I would be out in the woods, like, getting lost somewhere. But some of the people that they find or find their clothes, like they were saying that some of the people they find are half naked or something, and they said it was because, I can't remember the word, but you when you're about to die,
undressing.
In Dyatlov.
Yes and they said though some of these people some of these people, it was only a couple days and it wasn't cold enough for that to have set in and happened. So these people are getting undressed somehow. And there was one guy, I do remember this. They don't know who it was, but there was a pair of pants. They said just looked like somebody had just melted out of them, that it was, they were still there. And there was like half of a tibia or something, or half of a bone and blood on both sides of the bone, but nothing else. Just a pair of pants and a bone.
Yeah, that's one of the most bizarre ones.
Animal to me, though, you know.
I mean, the pants are literally upright.
Up, they were up.
Like,
yeah.
Like standing up, like, so they said it looked like somebody had just melted down into their pants.
Yeah.
And there was nobody there. There was no shoes either. No. I don't think.
Okay.
And a lot of these people they find without shoes. That's where all those feet come from.
And then they find in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that I should necessarily worry. I feel like I'm going to start getting lost in the details here. But with these scenes, and the pants are found upright, are there, you know, not just witness statements, but someone take a picture of it? Is there any corroborating evidence? Or is it
that
all
I
just,
don't know.
Yeah, is
I
it just
know.
Right? Just, of course not. It's just a legend.
Okay. Probably not. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's just
Carl.
Somebody said something.
Yeah. It's
Carl.
It's Carl. Fucking Carl.
Fucking Carl.
But then some people they found like way up a cliff or on the edge of a cliff. And one of the guys was saying that I was listening to today was saying that it was probably some, and they were, as guys, they were saying it sounded like guys would be stupid enough to pee off the side of a cliff and fall down it.
Oh yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Happens all the time.
They said that probably girls would not do that, and I can't see hanging off of a cliff and peeing.
Let me just
put
my butt off the
cliff and pee. So yeah, it's probably a dude that like tripped while he was trying to pee on a giant pine tree.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that stuff happens all the time. People just even just people going up and like, I'm going to get a look. And they just get, it just takes half a step too close and you're off the edge of that cliff.
Yeah. The newest thing is the selfies. People just trying to take these ridiculous selfies and falling down.
Back up.
Yep.
No, crazy. No, like I know this is a non sequitur, but it kind of connects. So my wife and I had road tripped out to the Grand Canyon and everything and back, but we were at Horseshoe Bend before they gated it off pretty much. So you could get right up to the edge. And I'm terrified of heights. And my wife is not. She was standing up. I was laying on my stomach with my arm upright, holding onto her belt in the event that she slipped. Because it works.
It was just freaking
She's
you
still
out.
Here. Oh, I'm a nervous wreck about that.
Yes.
Yeah,
like I don't like that.
Yeah. Like, she can be a bit klutzy.
You and I were destined to be best friends, Rick. I gotta say that. When my wife and I went to when we went to the Grand Canyon, I literally took my belt off and wrapped it around. I put it through her back, her belt, and connected it to hold on to her while she went out to the edge.
That's oh my
what
gosh.
Yeah.
It's what you do.
People are nuts.
No, I don't go to the edge of nothing. There. That's no. That makes me so nervous. I can't even look out the edge of a building. I mean, they have those buildings in Chicago that you can lean over. No, not even going to do that.
Sears Tower.
Yep.
Yeah, not even going to do that. No.
I just at the canyon, I remember saying, Jennifer, we have children. Why would you go out there? Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's too good. Well,
see,
maybe that
I was. Go ahead. What?
He's going to make a dark joke. I'm not going to make that dark joke.
Maybe that's okay. Why.
Exactly. Thank you, Jordan.
You're welcome.
I did the glass bottom floor thing at that tall tower in Sydney when we went to Australia. Oh, that was the scariest thing I ever did in my life. Mm-mm. And you were all buckled in the suits. And I lasted 3 seconds and I was back in the elevator. I'm like, I'm not doing that. The wind was blowing. And you're like, I'm going to fucking die.
No,
I'm coming, Steve Irwin.
<You know? laughs>
it was
like,
after he died when I went.
The whole time I was a kid, my dad was an arborist. He for like 35 years, right? Whoa. And he like worked in a bucket truck at like 180 feet in the air, cutting tree limbs and stuff. And I remember like on several occasions him taking me up with him in the bucket truck, and just
were you
being
too little
horrified.
To say. No.
Oh, no, I was not. Probably like 5-6 years old. I like just so that my face was just over the edge of the bucket. Oh. Right. And like that thing, I don't know if any of you have ever been up in one of those things.
No,
but it's literally like a
I'd say
12 inch
it'd
wide.
Wait.
Yeah. It's a 12 inch wide metal arm that goes straight down from the bottom of a bucket that's barely wider than a person. And it's 180 feet in the air. Ooh. And the whole time you're just swaying.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
No.
Terrifying.
See, nobody will ever have to worry about me falling off of anything like that because I'm not getting there.
Right. Not going up there. Yeah.
No.
That's smart.
No,
you'll find Tanya at sea level at all times.
Yes.
Never in the water and never any higher.
Sea level. That's the only time I'm below sea level is if I go to New Orleans. That's the only time I'm below sea level. But
not during hurricane season.
No, that's true. I won't go there then. I was kidding when I said it was a simulation, but it's weird because these people, they say that there's no way they could get up there, but yet they find them on these bluffs and cliffs and all this stuff. And I was thinking, like in Minecraft, to bring it back to video games, to Minecraft or whatever, the world renders as you walk, you know, it's not a world until you walk there. So what if like, that's what happened. They were on solid ground and then all of a sudden the world rendered and they're on a cliff and they don't know why. They don't know how they got there. They're on a cliff.
I don't know. I'm still with Carl.
Lemurians.
Mine is the world rendered while they were walking. All of a sudden they're on a cliff.
The Minecraft theory.
Something
here, Tanya.
I'll be basic and say it's correlation but not causation.
Right.
That's
I think a lot of people say that's not possible without knowing whether it's possible or not.
Right.
I think a lot of people just take something that's kind of weird and they go, that's impossible.
Right.
And then five other people say it and then you know on
and then
on,
everybody on. Says right. it right and then it's but then it's like proof forever.
Yeah, like a person climbing up to a particularly precarious, you know, rock outcrop,
right,
is not outside the bounds of human capability. You
right.
know what I mean?
Climbers, like it is for me.
Sure.
But for a climber, no. I mean,
even you,
free climb.
Right. But even you, Tanya, if a bear was chasing you, you might get your ass up that cliff.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Like,
that's true.
Yeah.
Adrenaline can make you do crazy things that you just wouldn't think that you could do.
I don't know. And I might become Bear's Breakfast if one was chasing me. You have more faith in my ability than I do.
I give you 50-50 odds.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And here's another thing about state parks, state land. There are a lot of houses and cabins that are only accessible like by ATV, and there's a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, more than you would think, that kind of live in these really remote areas. And who's to say some of these missing, you know, I mean, I'm not saying feral humans. I know I've been joking about that. But I am saying that there's more stuff in those areas than people think.
Yeah,
and right. You can be the most experienced hunter in the world and still get turned around in woods you've grown up in your whole life.
Well, yeah.
You know, so... A lot of the criteria, although the elevation ones always get me, those get me sometimes. And like, I didn't know about the pants. I had like halfway read about the pants thing, but I thought they were just random pants laying on the ground. I didn't know.
No, they were standing up. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I got
like when your teenage son takes off a sock like that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
That's a thing. That's
worse than finding a tibia, let me tell you.
Okay. Yeah, I think it would be too, actually.
Listen, the one time we moved, I went and moved, I think Austin was like 14 at that time, and I went and moved his bed, and that little shit literally had a rig around the bed on the wall from where he used to lay and play his video games. And I'm like, you're washing that. That's
boys
disgusting.
Are so gross.
They are disgusting. So gross.
Yep.
And when we were 12 or 13, we loved them little boys. As a mom, you're like, you're fucking, oh my God.
Yeah, you're nasty. Yeah, when you're 14 and there's some little scummy right. boy, oh, you're like, oh, he's so great. Cute.
I'm like, our noses must not have been developed.
No. Yeah.
I see, as a father to teenage boys right now, I have four teenage boys.
Oh, right my now. God.
I'm so sorry. I raised three.
Yeah. And I see these like little girls following them around, you know, and I'm like, if only you knew.
Yep.
If only you knew the vile creature that you're following.
That you
around.
Were in love with.
Yes.
100%. He's got a booger collection somewhere.
You have no, yeah. Those girls have no idea.
He
how disgusting.
Without his bed.
Because I have a daughter too. So I see the difference between a little boy and a little girl. Those boys don't deserve those girls.
No,
yeah, no. And I'll tell you something else. Teenage boys are way more dramatic than teenage girls.
Oh yeah.
Way more. Yeah. I found that. You would think it'd be that. I used to do, because we had the blended family, so we had the three boys and three girls. I would split it up and I would do a boys' day and then a girls' day. I would come home from a day with the boys high-fiving in a great mood. We had the best day.
Girls
I come
like
home from
crying.
The girls be like, oh my fucking God, give me a drink. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of these people might have been parents that disappeared. Parents of four boys. God.
Listen, I actually can understand wanting to just, I wanted to do that. I have dreamt about that. I have kind of half-assed planned it. You know, just fucking disappearing.
Do
it.
Yeah.
Be a missing 411 and we don't know why.
No, because you're stuck with me now. Now I kind of like my life. All right. So yeah, you're lost, buddy. You're lost. But I you know, so I kind of get that. You know, I get that mindset. And I kind of thought that about Steven in the beginning. Like I said, I thought, well, I mean, I kind of feel like it was 1978, the age of love, peace, and happiness, lots and lots of drugs. And, you know, mind expansion was a thing, and that would have been something he was into.
Right.
You know, so... But there are some weird ones for sure.
There is. And I had brought up that book that Jordan said was his favorite. That's probably one of my favorite Stephen King books, because it's not a scary book. Yeah. I mean, it is, but it's not. I don't know if either. Well, Rick knows. Did you know about it, Trina? The girl who loved, what is it?
Tom Gordon.
No,
I don't think I've read it.
So that book reminds me of a missing 411 case, because she goes into the woods to go to the bathroom. I heard her mom are fighting. So she goes off into the woods to go to the bathroom. She gets, I don't remember the beginning of it other than she kind of gets lost from them. And she's in the woods for like weeks and weeks at first she's okay because she has a radio and this baseball player that she's in love with is talking to her. Then her battery, the battery dies, but I think he's still talking to her and stuff. And there was something in the woods that was helping her. And it was showing, that was what the whole book was her journey through here. And there was something that was kind of like a bear. They were saying it was a bear that had helped her, but it was not a bear probably. But she was found like 300 miles away or something crazy. It was such a good book. Mm-hmm. But it reminds me of that because that's exactly what, you know, people show up and say bears helped them or something.
Yeah, it's easy to imagine something like that happening, right? Because the little girl like goes off trail and she makes like two wrong turns and suddenly the sun's going down.
Yeah.
And she's just nowhere to go, right?
She doesn't have a tent. She just had a radio with her in a bag, I think, maybe a purse that the radio was in. And it's a transistor radio. And at first she's hearing the baseball game and then he starts talking to her.
Right.
Because Lord knows how long she's been out there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just,
and she's just like 13 or 14 years old or something. So it's really, 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 really good. But it does remind me of a missing 411 case.
Yeah. It's a great book. It's my favorite.
Yeah.
I'm a huge Stephen King fan and it's my favorite Stephen King book.
Yeah, so. His books, to me, the ones that aren't scary are the best.
Yeah.
Because he is a good writer.
For sure.
He just kind of got a little crazy there in the middle of the
crazy 70s. Too, though.
The coke.
I like those fueled. Crazy. Yeah. I like those like cough medicine and cocaine books.
Yes.
Like Cujo.
I love those. It got a little off the rails.
sure. Yeah. Huh. He also
parts
has
of
a,
it did.
He also struggled in the 80s and early 90s with writing women.
Oh yeah,
which is a classic flaw in even the best writers, right? But
that's
bobbled boobily.
Yep. She boobed her way down the stairs.
Yeah. But all in all, he's a really, really good writer.
Tom Gordon is. It's an awesome book.
It is.
Like, I think it's his clearest representation of like the forces of good and evil's effect on humanity.
Yeah.
That's what the book's really about because she removes the character from society and the only influences on her are in her own mind.
Yep.
So it's a good book.
And she has to go through some awful stuff. You know, she has to, there's at one point, a deep swamp she has to go through and everything. And I would be terrified as a little kid. They'd find me curled up against the tree crying as if I was 13 in the woods. So she did way better than I did. I would. So what do we think the missing 411 is?
I like Trina's feral human theory.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I'm someone who thinks that at least 40% of cryptid sightings are guys in ghillie suits who have never been to a grocery store. I think that's exactly what it is.
It could be. There's somewhere, and it probably is Florida, where there is people living in the woods.
There's everywhere. A lot of homeless camps. Yep. I just know like a lot of like a lot of people have cabins in these remote places. So it's not out of the realm a possibility that other people live there. Actually, I know people live in these remote places.
Yeah.
And a lot of these places are only accessible by like ATV or snowmobile
or a boat.
My family has a compound on the island in between Detroit and Canada. You can only get there by boat. So like, I mean, I'm that mindset. That's probably why I thought of it too. I mean, really like, there's gotta be other people living there, and who's to say for how long? And again, back to feral humans, but you know, and like I said, I have my nut job theories about the underground species, but I don't think that's what 411 is. And
I just think it's a bunch of cases that
I think a lot of it
different stuff.
More than we think can be put down to human monsters.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yes,
I think
Canada's awful.
I think the biggest problem people have with assessing the missing 411 phenomena, as it were, is the fact that they want one answer. And I think there are as many answers as there are cases.
Right, because there's all different things that could have happened.
Yeah, I think the real service that David Pilates did was getting it out there that there are tons of cases happening that no one's talking about.
Yeah.
Right. It made people start talking about it. He literally encouraged legislation. So it's a good thing. But I don't think there's one answer.
That was the part that hooked me, because I'm like, he's got an actual point here, especially when I started looking in the numbers and how they did not match up. You know, and there's nothing that's going to hook Trina's brain rather than, you know, shit that doesn't make sense like that. and so I was really actually really down into it. And then the nut job theory started popping out. And I'm like, and then Carl, although I kind of like Carl. And I mean, I just think, like Jordan just said, there's multiple answers to this. Mm-hmm. Could there be a paranormal answer to some of them? For sure. But not all of them. A lot of human monsters. The two cases I brought tonight definitely were not paranormal.
I think the baby one of yours, the one you told, was definitely a human monster.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think
Dior. Those were the humans. Humans. I mean, it's mainly a case of figuring out which one, or was it all five, or you know, that's.
There's a reason why, like you said, when you discussed it, that you'd heard that story before. It was more widely covered by like straight true crime shows and news reports than, because that's probably what it was. It was probably, I mean,
the family killed the baby.
Yeah.
There's quite a lot of interviews with the family, the mom and the dad out there. And you can, even not being a police officer or any sort of person like that, I can watch these four different interviews and hear the four different stories and go, bro, you're so guilty.
Somebody's,
you know, like, you know what happened.
Yeah.
Fucking just tell us what you did to the baby.
Right.
And right. Exactly.
I mean, and it's not even necessarily that someone killed the child on purpose. It could have just been, you know, two drug users out on a camping trip, not paying attention, and something stupid happens, or one of the guy goes like, oh, wouldn't it be funny to pass him back and forth, or, you know what I mean? Like, just dumb shit like that. And something terrible happens and they have to cover their asses.
Yeah. They were camped right next to a river. He could have come up out of that tent before they got up in the morning
and got in the water himself.
And got in the water himself. And that's it.
Yeah.
Well, and then that's why there wouldn't be no scent.
Right.
If that happened.
There was also the thing that I was listening to was talking about, you know, maybe on some of these, like a hunter by accident shot another hunter. And because he didn't want to be charged with manslaughter or something like that, he buried him.
Yeah.
You know, and there's
mundane answers to this. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's everything. Yeah. I tried not to attribute to the supernatural that which could be explained by humans.
Right.
Yeah. Like, that's
right. I just think most of these are humans. Yeah. Things.
I'm with you on this.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's bears running around the forest grabbing people. I really don't.
It'd be pretty cool though.
Yeah. I'd go for a bear ride.
Yes. Well, I loved that story with the kid, and you think, I'm a Bigfoot guy, so I think, oh, it's Bigfoot helping the child.
Little
and that kid. Like, that sucks me in. But then I think this is a kid, the parents are making up all these stories. Like, it's just
it could also be a man in a ghillie suit.
Could be. That's He's never been to a grocery store. He's just helping this kid out.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. He wanted to make sure that didn't want to get close enough to all the people, but didn't want the kid to freeze to death. So he the kid in a little shelter.
Somebody goes to take a random selfie, falls down the cliff, and then, you know, the guy who's living back in the woods off the grid decides he's just going to fuck with the searchers. I'll put one boot on this rock. And I'll put one boot on this rock. So it could just be somebody with a fucked up sense of humor.
Yeah, that's good. I hadn't thought of that.
There's just a rural Riddler out there somewhere.
But again,
rural Riddler.
The numbers of the missing are so underreported, and
they are.
That's the thing I want to highlight the most, is that nobody's looking for these people. There's a lot, no. big, huge demographics of people that nobody seems to care about. And that's right. One thing that this brings.
Except
to
the
light.
Families that are still missing them.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah. For that, I can rattle off these numbers, but for that means there's 22,000 mamas missing their kids right now.
Right. And don't know what happened to them.
Exactly. That yeah. Don't know what they happened. There's no right. Answers. They're not in the NAMIS database. They're not.
And now the cops have given up, you know, because,
or the cops never looked to begin with because of the right. Color of their skin or their profession or right. They use drugs. So why look, you know, right. Again, we pick and choose who we choose to highlight on the media and we pick and, you know, we pick and choose all of that. And it's quite frankly, a lot of it's disgusting to me, but I won't get on that yeah. Soapbox tonight.
No, what Marcus Parks calls the less dead. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's a big
or the
problem.
Lost missing. There was a documentary about that. The lost missing or the missing lost. I might be flip flopping it. The people nobody gives a shit about. Well, I give a shit about them. So there's that.
I do too. Yeah.
But I see Rick is rubbing his eyes, so we should probably wrap this up.
Sorry.
Jordan looks like he's about to pass out.
Jordan wants to crack open that NyQuil and snort.
I do.
It.
I am ill.
Oh, yeah. He's got a date with the Hat Man tonight.
Yeah. He's going to slow dance with him.
That sounds lovely.
Well, thanks again, Jordan, for joining us and really bringing a lot of information to the pod. And like I said, it was all serendipitous. I'm super glad that it worked out that way. Why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you, your Patreon, if they want to hear more about these missing, because absolutely. I love what you're doing with that actually.
Yeah. You can find Campfire Tales of the Strange and Unsettling on any and all podcast platforms. Wherever you're listening to this, you can find us. You can follow us on Instagram, on Facebook, on TikTok, on all the shit. Everything we're there everywhere. But honestly, if you want to talk to me, Instagram is the way to go. That's the one I'm really on a lot.
What's your name on Instagram? Just
campfire.tales.podcast. Yep.
Okay.
Just go there and follow. I know I follow yours.
Yeah.
I'm sure I do.
And you can go to patreon.com/campfire tales of the strange and unsettling. It'll take you longer to type in the URL than it will to choose the tier you want, but yeah, you can do it. I believe in you. And that is
awesome.
All.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Cool. Thank you, Rick. Why don't you tell the listeners where they can find us?
Facebook, where Instagram, Twitter, Parlor, True Social, TikTok, OnlyFans, Only Feet, Christian Mingle, Only Farmers.
OnlyFarmers.com.
Where else? I don't know. Probably some other stuff. I think we've got videos on X Hamster. Maybe we got some stuff on there.
Oh sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, I gotta fund my Monster Fest trip. Don't judge.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everybody slide to Trina's DMs.
Yes. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Jordan, are you going to be at Monster Fest?
I'm trying so hard.
You can hang out with us if you make it.
You could hang out at our table.
Yeah, I would love to.
We're going to have the biggest table on the planet.
I'm still iffy, but I'm trying.
Yeah. It's, you know, five kids. It's hard to schedule anything.
It
takes me away for more than a couple hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I had them early. So when my youngest graduates high school, I'll only be 42.
That's what I did.
And I'll tell you what. Second half of my life.
Yeah. Yep. My kids are grown and I'm actually living a really flipping great life now.
That's awesome.
So I am glad. Like I had everybody like jump in my crap when I got married and jump. And I did finish school, but like a year, college, but like a year later.
Sure.
But I had nine aunts calling me, what are you doing? But at the same time, I'm glad I did all of that.
Yeah.
And I did finish. I finished in my own time and did my own thing, which I always have done.
Yeah.
So and here we
I mean, are. I didn't finish graduate school until I was 34.
Yeah.
So I took my time.
Yeah. I tell people that all the time. You're not on some random schedule that's been drilled into our heads where you got to do such and such a thing by such and such an age. Everybody has their own way they wander, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And on that happy note, I'm going to sign off and say goodbye, listeners.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Oh, weird. I love it.
Yeah.
listening. You can find us on all the socials, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. Subscribe and review our pod wherever you listen. We have merch on Redbubble and Big Cartel. See you later, creeps.